There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's shows from Sunday, October the 20th. And as you can probably hear from the activity behind me, we're out and about. I'm recording today's Bite Size Business Breakfast from Expo 2020 Dubai.
To my left, I can see the Sustainability Pavilion. To my right, the Falcon-inspired UAE Pavilion. And of course, the giant Al Wasl Dome that's going to be the centrepiece, the beating heart of Expo 2020 Dubai. I tell you, it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up just to see it. And we've been putting that question to the Chief Pavilions and Exhibitions Officer here at Expo 2020 Dubai, Marjan Fedadouni. How does it make you feel knowing it's just 365 days to go?
It's a combination of feelings, to be honest. Excitement that we have one more year to, actually exactly a year to welcome visitors, but also a lot of emotions around making sure that we get everything up and running in a year's time. So it's a combination of emotions. We're really excited to celebrate with everyone, but at the same time, make sure that we get everything ready.
Well, getting everything ready is clearly a priority. So much has been done. The major infrastructure is pretty much in place. The main buildings are pretty much in place. But let's not escape the fact that there's a lot of work to be done. Lots of cranes, lots of construction, lots of people here for the next 12 months or so. And we asked Marjan, what's top of the list of things to do?
So you guys are overlooking the expo site specifically the sustainability district, where you see a lot of our key architecture features there. And as you can see, is one of our areas is we have this big gate that's going to be welcoming the visitors. We call them the arrival gates. And as you go in, you see right in front of you the sustainability pavilion, which is also known as Terra, which is an experience that we're working on to inspire the visitors around the theme of sustainability and get them to think about what they can do with regards to being at balance with nature.
I mean, looking out at the site now, as Richard said, it does make hair stand up. 3 years ago when I visited for, I think, the first time, or maybe 3.5 years ago, this was just flat. There was nothing here, and here we are looking out at a city. I don't think anywhere in the world could anything have been built so quickly. It's astonishing to look out here.
It is. I mean, it's self-contained, isn't it?
It is a city. It's a small city. And Expo, we know, coming up 1 year today, what are the ticket prices going to be? Well, they're going to be 120 dirhams for a single-day general admission ticket, 260 days for three-day passes to any 3 days of the event. And we spoke to Sanjeev Khosla earlier in the year. He's the Chief Commercial Officer at Expo 2020 Dubai, and he told us that many will also be allowed in for free.
Toddlers under the age of 5 can go in free. People 65 and above can go in free. In addition, we also have people of determination are going to be free. The carers who come with them will have a 50% off. Any other child between the age of 5 and 17 will have 50% off. Anybody with a student pass even above the age of 17 gets 50% off. So there's a whole range of offers which are there.
And he also told us that there are special tickets on offer, allowing people to queue hop so that they don't have to wait hours and hours in the queues, because that was one of the big problems at Milan Expo in 2015.
Any visitor to Expo 2020, even if they buy a single-day general admission ticket, they are entitled to what is called as a smart queue. So that means you can make a time-based reservation for your pavilion of choice on the day that you plan to come. Now, once you get into the queue and you clock in, you can make the next reservation. So it's the counter resets to zero. You can add one more after that. So you have this one option that you can keep using as you go through the expo.
Also looking at the entertainment aspects, Brandy, but also the way that cinema is inspiring the whole expo experience and concept.
Exactly. Like with the London Olympics, when you have a major movie maker on board, you know that the opening ceremony and the actual look and feel of the event is going to be fantastic. Shekhar Kapoor is a Bollywood filmmaker and director, and also an Expo 2020 Dubai advisor. We spoke to him on the show recently, and he explained to us what his role is with Expo.
I'm an advisor on content from the board. You know, we board advisors. I'm not the decision maker, obviously, but I, because of my experience and because of the large amount of Asian population here, I guess I'm here also to see that, do you understand this IKEA? How will they respond to various ideas that we put on? You know, we are putting up 60 events every day. Gourmet restaurants, the investment is huge, the architecture is huge. So we have to find ways to make it valid beyond the 6 months. What happens after that? What changes? How does the perception of Dubai change?
I'm thinking sort of Danny Boyle in the Olympics opening ceremony for Shekhar Kapoor, bringing a bit of Bollywood magic to Expo. He did say to us as well that he is deeply impressed by the architecture that's at the Expo site.
When you look at the design at the Expo 2020, every little building immediately provokes something, provokes a story. Even if it's a very vague story, you are attracted to it because it provokes something in your heart and your mind that attracts you to it. So that the architecture is almost done, and it's pretty stunning.
We've also been talking about food, but before we get some insights on that, we have some, this is rather unexpected, we have some special guests joining us in the Majlis here at the Expo 2020 site. Just to kind of set the scene, we're at the Expo 2020 site. We're in the site offices overlooking the building site, the construction site, and we're in the Majlis that they normally reserve for VIPs, and two have just walked in, Brandy.
Exactly. We have two inquisitive Emirati children called Latifa and Rashid, better known, I think, as the Expo mascots. But I'm not expecting much in the way of conversation due to the giant heads.
They are people of few words. If you want to have a look at them, check out our Instagram feed and our Twitter pages and Facebook, and you can see them. But thanks, guys, for coming in. Appreciate it. Ahlan wa sahlan. It's wonderful to have you here on the Business Breakfast. Now, as I was saying before, we were so happily interrupted. Food is a big part of Expo. Always has been. 1876, the big star of the Philadelphia Expo was Heinz Ketchup. 1904 in St. Louis, the ice cream cone stole the show. And we expect food to be front and center here. Gillian Hamburger is the Senior Vice President for Programming at Expo 2020 Dubai. And food and beverage is a big part of what she does. And some of that, yes, is the 200 or so outlets to make sure people are fed and watered when they're visiting. But you've also got innovation in food. They're talking about robotics, augmented reality, and virtual reality impacting some of the food exhibits here at Expo 2020 Dubai. And this is what Gillian told us.
We've also had items like cotton candy, and it's just in Wrigley Spearmint Gum came out of an expo, so it does have this great tradition for people to see things for the first time. Now, we are having great innovation in F&B. We have two tremendous concepts, actually, that we're just awarding right now, just purely focused on the future of food, as well as the journey of food in a truly immersive, interactive experience. So you'll have to watch the space a little bit. We have over 200 F&B outlets site-wide, but throughout all of the experiences, you'll be able to taste different things from around the world and really experience food in a different way.
That's Gillian Hamburger, Senior Vice President here for Programming.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We are celebrating everything Expo, but also looking at the business case for participants, the visitor experience for those who will be coming, and where we actually are in the big Expo countdown. We're joined now by Marjan Faridouni, who is Chief Pavilions and Exhibitions Officer at Expo 2020 Dubai. Marjan, it's lovely to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to the Expo site. It's lovely to have you here.
How does it feel for you guys 1 year out? Is it a celebration that you've come so far, or is the ticking clock getting really loud now?
It's a combination of feelings, to be honest. Excitement that we have one more year to, actually exactly a year to welcome visitors, but also a lot of emotions around making sure that we get everything up and running in a year's time. So it's a combination of emotions. We're really excited to celebrate with everyone, but at the same time, make sure that we get everything ready.
Well, let's take stock of where exactly we are and what still needs to be done.
So you guys are overlooking the expo site specifically the sustainability district, where you see a lot of our key architecture features there. And as you can see, is one of our areas is we have this big gate that's going to be welcoming the visitors. We call them the arrival gates. And as you go in, you see right in front of you the sustainability pavilion, which is also known as Terra, which is an experience that we're working on to inspire the visitors around the theme of sustainability and get them
them to think about what they can do with regards to being in balance with nature.
What are you going to be doing over the next year? What still needs to be built and put together here?
So from my perspective, specifically working on exhibitions and pavilions for the visitors at Expo, we've passed the planning phase, and we're at the stage of making sure that all our exhibitions are being fabricated and being put into the structures that we have built. And when I talk about the three structures that my team and I specifically work on, they're the mobility pavilion, the sustainability pavilion, and opportunity pavilion, which are going to be one of the three anchors in addition to 190 nations that are coming to exhibit at the Expo. And we're really working on how are we going to be operating in the 173 days of the Expo.
What happens to you a year today? Are you out of a job along with all the other people in this vibrant but bustling building?
Very funny that you ask, because these are the types of discussions we're having. What is our role during the Expo? On a serious note, there's a lot of operating structures that we need to have in order to make sure that we operate seamlessly over the 173 days. Specifically on my end, I imagine myself doing a lot of things, making sure that the pavilions are up and running, making sure the kids are coming in seamlessly from schools, walking around the site, being there for any of the team members that require help that are working on the operations on a daily basis. So really doing everything, welcoming people too.
I'm just wondering how you keep people motivated, knowing your job has a limited shelf life, or is that just the nature of these types of events, big sporting events, etc. as well?
I mean, I think we all would need a vacation after the Expo, so a lot of us are looking forward to it. But on a serious note, we have plans in place for what happens to a lot of us after the Expo. There's also an aspect of it around the physical legacy that still remains. So a few of us will be remaining to make sure to take that through District 2020.
How much will Expo actually be changing during the 6 months of the event? A lot of those school children that you mentioned, yes, will be coming here more than once. A lot of Dubai residents, you obviously want to come multiple times. How often will you be changing up what actually is offered in those three main pavilions you talked about?
So basically, when we look at the offering for the visitors, we look at it to both international and the domestic visitors, and we have a very solid programming plan that complements a lot of the exhibitions on site to make sure that we offer something different every day. Of course, from the exhibition perspectives, you get to see a lot of the same thing, but then we complement it with a lot of our programming and shows and parades that you see during the day and that you see during the night. And we've been carefully looking at the type of visitors that we're coming, so we've been very careful about the type of programmings that we'll be offering to the visitors.
The physical infrastructure is there. We can see it before our eyes now. How confident are you that it is going to have the wow factor that you're aspiring to?
I'd like to say we're pretty confident. We get to see the site on a daily basis, and when we visit a lot of the key iconic structures, we get at awe. And one specific one that I'd like to highlight, the Al Wasl Plaza. It's going to be a unique space, not only at the Expo, but in the UAE. When you enter it, you get this different feel of this huge, beautiful garden, and it's just one of the places that you would be at awe at the Expo. And another one would be perhaps the sustainability pavilion, which is a solar panel generated structure where it looks like an umbrella, and you have different feels that you get as you enter
and
it.
The Al Wasl Plaza itself is going to be familiar to residents of Dubai well into the future, because that's going to be used,
yeah,
for parties, for celebrations, for National Day, right into the future. So it will become part of our lives.
Absolutely. And not only the Al Wasl Plaza, but the entire site that you see out there, we're maintaining 80% of the infrastructure. So that as Al Wasl lives on after the Expo, so do the other structures. For example, Terra will continue to be a children's and science center. And the structures that have been hosting a lot of the countries with the exhibitions will transform into spaces that will be welcoming companies of different sizes to the site.
How do you future-proof the buildings to make sure that they continue being interesting and relevant afterwards?
It comes right from the beginning, and that's what we take pride at Expo, that when we designed the site from beginning to end, we had the question of what happens to the structures afterwards. A lot of people don't know this, but the buildings that we've built have basement parking. During the Expo, this basement parking will be used for operational purposes, but they will serve the future requirements of the city in the future. And that's one example of how we thought about future-proofing the city.
Will any of it need to be redeveloped, either at a surface level or a cosmetic level?
So from a natural perspective, we're going to have to remove a lot of the exhibitions that are out there, and we'd require to do a bit of changes to make sure that it's ready to welcome the different businesses that want to set up at the expo site in the future.
Thank you very much for joining us. We are down here at Expo 2020 Dubai, celebrating a year out, speaking to Marjan Faridouni, the Chief Pavilions and Exhibitions Officer for the event. We appreciate your time. Shukran.
Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
From the time of the first expo in London back in 1851, the expo event and theme has captured minds and imaginations around the world. Lawnmowers, tomato ketchup, the Eiffel Tower, these are just some of the things that have been unveiled at years gone past at expos around the globe. They've got a legacy of not only changing a city's geography and infrastructure, but also the mindsets of the people living and visiting those cities. See, this event encourages people to think in different ways, and that is the beauty of the World Exposition, to give it its formal title. I was there in Paris in 2013 on that unforgettable day when the Bureau International des Expositions named Dubai as the hosts of the 2020 edition. I remember thinking to myself that people who've never been to the Middle East will now come to Dubai just to be part of Expo 2020 and open their eyes that way. History has proven that it's an event like no other, and I really can't wait to see the show that Dubai puts on in 365 days from today. This is Malcolm Taylor of The Business Breakfast.
The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
And joining us is Natasha Thomas from the ARN News Centre, who is not in the ARN newsroom today, but is here at the Expo Majlis. How are you enjoying the new environment?
It's been lovely. It's so nice to look over the site and to see how far it's come along. I remember coming here, I think it was with you, Malcolm, around 3 years ago.
It was 3 years ago.
We drove around the site, and it was flat. Just flat, yes. Yeah. And look at it now.
Food and beverage and everything, yeah.
Yes, I've been sitting by that counter all morning.
Now, I know you've been looking at a number of different expo stories on air for the ARN News Centre and on the ARN News Centre app. Which one in particular have you picked today?
Well, we're looking at the organisation side of things. So obviously, that's a big deal for authorities here in Dubai, the event itself. So Dubai Police and the RTA are involved. They're building the big metro station, the line which is coming all the way here. Dubai Police, for them, logistically, it's a big challenge, and we are looking at how they are going to keep people moving and safe during the mega event. So our producer Mohammed Suleiman has this special report.
Doors closing.
Dubai's Roads and Transport Authority is going above and beyond to ensure that the hundreds of thousands of people who visit Expo 2020 on a daily basis can get there easily. Work is nearing completion on a special metro route which will connect Nakheel Harbour and Tower Station to the expo site. The 15-kilometer Route 2020 line will make the venue just a few stops away on the train. For those coming by car, the RTA has invested more than 3 billion dirhams in developing the city's road network. This includes widening several roads leading to the expo site in Dubai South. From transport to security, and we know that with any major event, ensuring the safety of all those attending is of the utmost importance. That's why Dubai Police have come up with an elaborate security plan that involves the use of artificial intelligence. An integrated surveillance system along with a holistic cybersecurity network will be rolled out to make sure that all kinds of threats are adequately dealt with. With exactly a year to go until Expo 2020 Dubai gets underway, it's already clear that the millions who descend here will not only be in safe hands, but will also have an easy time getting where they need to. This is Mohammed Suleiman reporting for the Business Breakfast.
Well, that was Mohammed's report looking at the logistical arrangements in place. Now, there is an event this evening at the Burj Park in downtown Dubai where American pop star Mariah Carey and acclaimed Emirati singer Hussein Al-Jasmi will be performing for a free concert. But just for people who were hoping to go down there, if you're not registered, if you don't have a ticket, you probably should not. You will not be allowed into Birch Park, but there are lots of free events happening around the Emirates, and you can get all those details on the Expo website.
You could, of course, just rent a penthouse on Airbnb or yes. similar sites and watch it then. Not the cheapest way to watch a free concert, but it would be one option.
Yeah, it'll probably cost the same amount as you would spend on a ticket to those artists. So,
Natasha, thanks very much indeed. Malcolm, you've been looking at Facebook's cryptocurrency project Libra.
Yeah, because we know that Facebook have been trying very hard to establish what they call a global digital currency, but it's suffered some severe setbacks over recent weeks. They've had some big pullouts. Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, eBay have all abandoned the project. And now Facebook is facing even bigger issues because JP Morgan Chase chief executive Jamie Dimon says it's a neat idea that will never happen. He's putting the boot in big time.
Why does he say that?
He says that it's faced criticism from policymakers and regulators, but he said he doesn't think it's going to work because of the regulation, really. He says that it just there aren't going to be enough people behind it who will support it. And he says that it just is an idea that maybe is ahead of its time, but he just doesn't think that the central banks are going to give it the nod.
Okay, so do we think, straw poll, he is the voice of experience, a veteran banker, being the voice of reason on this and injecting some much-needed common sense, or is he being a Wall Street dinosaur who is trying to prevent an upstart coming to eat his and the traditional finance industry's lunch?
A.
I think A as well.
Yeah, normally I would have said B, because we've heard a lot come out from the traditional banks about cryptocurrencies that have definitely been in that dinosaur camp. But on this one, A.
Motion carried then. Jamie Dimon's right.
Back in 2017, he said that cryptocurrencies were worse than tulip bulbs. But he pulled back from that a little bit, but he still doesn't think this is going to happen, I'm afraid.
Speaking of pulling back, at 5 o'clock this morning, US President Donald Trump came out and said that he was not going to host this G7 summit at his house.
Go on.
Because there was a huge amount of controversy around the fact that Donald Trump was planning to host the upcoming G7 meeting that the US will be hosting at his own luxury resort in Florida, the Trump National Doral? Doral? Not quite sure how I'm supposed to say that. Doral. I kind of want to put on a southern accent for it. D-O-R-A-L.
Doral?
Good enough for me. Oh, Doral! It's the golf club thing.
Yes, it's a golf club.
Yeah, Doral.
Okay, he has tweeted the following.
I've played it on the PlayStation many times. Mohammed Suleiman, Doral, very fancy golf club, isn't it?
Doral is one of the best golf courses in Florida, but obviously belongs to Mr. Trump, so we have to be careful. But yes, Doral, it is Doral.
Well, the poor G7 leaders are not going to get a chance to experience it. The president has tweeted thus, I thought I was doing something very good for our country by using Trump National Doral in Miami to host the G7 leaders. It is big, grand, on hundreds of acres, next to Miami International Airport, has tremendous ballrooms and meeting rooms, and each delegation would have its own 50 to 70 unit building.
Clean towels and soap in every room.
Would set up better than other alternatives. I announced that I would do it at no profit or, if legally permissible, at zero cost to the USA. But as usual, the hostile media and their Democrat partners went crazy. There are various capital letters in there. I don't know if I've expressed them adequately. There's been a lot of welcome for this move and a lot of kind of non-welcome welcome, as in people saying, well, yes, but we're not going to congratulate you for doing the right thing after public outcry has forced you to do the right thing.
So where do we think it's going to happen instead? Mar-a-Lago?
Camp David, apparently, is now one of the options.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We're looking at the financial case for countries taking part at Expo. We are joined now by Clayton Kempton, who's the New Zealand Commissioner General to Expo 2020 Dubai. Clayton, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Tell me, as a country, what's the decision to take part in an Expo based on?
We don't go to every expo, so we need to do a business case to Parliament, which goes through all of the economic and non-economic benefits and, I guess, risks of attending an expo. The last one we went to was in Shanghai, and when the invitation came from His Highness to our Prime Minister, he asked us to go through that same process where an economic business case was put together. We had the support of ministers, and so Cabinet made a decision to participate. And we went ahead with, and Treasury also agreed and gave us the appropriation we needed.
I'd be interested to know that argument for Tokyo in 2012 and not Milan in 2015.
Shanghai in 2010.
In 2012, but why not Milan? What was the argument against?
That's a good question, because the same business case had to be made. I think there were a number of reasons. There was the global financial crisis at the time. We just had a major earthquake in Christchurch. And we also didn't have the same issues that we're facing in Europe. There was no free trade agreement to advance, and it was a very mature relationship. So on that particular occasion, Parliament decided that no, that was not an expo we'd participate in. We had other priorities at the time.
So what gave you the green light for this? Why do you think that the funds were allocated, the tick was given?
I think a big part of this is the broader relationship. The UAE is a very important relationship in this region for New Zealand. But also the proven logistics hub that Dubai has become is so important to New Zealand as a trading nation. We rely on being able to export everything we make and invent. And here we have a logistics hub, both sea and air, that gets us into Africa, into Europe, into the rest of the world. So it's so important to us.
Remind us how much money they've given you to build this.
In New Zealand dollars, it's $53.4 million.
And what do they want to see back? What do you have to do for that?
Well, we've got a range of KPIs, and they're quite hard targets. It's not how many people have we had through our pavilion or will we get an award. They're much more substantive than that. We are measuring an increase in trade to existing markets, increase in trade to new markets, an increase in investment, increase in education, increase in tourism, and we're also measuring the changes in perception about New Zealand as a result of our participation.
It's going to be quite hard to measure some of those, isn't it?
The trade investment statistics, we've got a benchmark to start with, and we can see those move.
I guess really sort of trying to put a tag on it, so how much has come directly as a result of the expo?
That is more difficult, and the economists have a formula that they go through, but we need to be able to show that shift. What we do know from Shanghai is that came just at the start of the first free trade agreement that China had with a Western country. Our trade with China has improved just so many-fold. And participation in expos is one part of that. So you can't put every increase in trade with an expo, but if you weren't there, what percentage of that would not have happened? So you sort of have to be there to participate.
As a New Zealander, I know that the government doesn't hand out money lightly. What's the scrutiny on you like to make sure from the New Zealand press that you don't waste it, that you're flying an economy and you're not paying for extra baggage?
Well, of course, there's a lot of scrutiny. It's not just from the press. You can imagine that there's the Treasury. I have two ministers that I report to. I have a board. We are audited every 2 months externally. Because we are given the autonomy to get on and make this participation awesome. At the same time, we've got all of the Public Finance Act requirements to comply with. So I get comfort from that we are scrutinised. And the press are also part of that auditing, if you like. So it's a very important part of our success.
So what does $54-odd million get you pavilion-wise?
Well, we're really fortunate. First of all, Expo gave us an outstanding location. In the sustainability district, we're in a great concourse with neighbours like Germany and Spain and the Netherlands and Singapore and the Czech Republic. So location, location, location. But we've also got a 2,200 square metre pavilion on a 3,400 metre site. Two-thirds is the pavilion experience, which is an 18-metre-high exhibition centre. And then a third is dedicated to a restaurant and business-to-business hosting and VIP suite.
How do you move the image of New Zealand on so that it's not just stuffed with all-black shirts and woolly sheep?
And that's one of our major KPIs. And we've done some experience, we've done some perception testing already, and we want to see that shift after Expo. We need to change the story. We'll develop the story. We're not just a wonderful place to visit. We're not just great at rugby.
Although, let's be fair, we can say this morning that we are indeed great at rugby.
We can.
Until next weekend.
The fact is we are an innovative nation of creative idea makers. We have an amazing movie production industry within the creative sector. We have an amazing IT industry. We have amazing specialized manufacturing industry. And so one of our tasks is, under the banner of care for people and place, which is our theme, is to really expand that notion about New Zealand, that we're more than just a nice place to visit. We pair ingenuity with care to ensure future generations are looked after.
What's the most expensive bit of taking part of an expo? Where does the bulk of the money go? Is it people? Is it the actual physical building?
The most expensive bit. The most expensive bit will be the experience inside, and that's where it should be. We need to make sure that the experience is the thing that people remember. You know, it's a little bit like when you go from one pavilion to the next. I need to ensure that everyone remembers that New Zealand pavilion. So it's what happens inside that is the most important.
And for you, probably more than any other country, is vitally important, because there's one thing you can't change about New Zealand is actually the fact it's a very, very long way away. How do you convince people it's worth travelling to?
Well, millions of people already travel there, and so that's so we've already convinced the world that it's an amazing place to visit. But we're a trading nation as well, and so we need to make sure that as many markets as possible are importing products from New Zealand. We haven't had trouble convincing people to come to New Zealand, and so we want to continue to convince people to come to New Zealand. But when you show some of those amazing landscapes and amazing places to visit, people flock there. And a direct flight from, and Emirates has a direct flight from Dubai now, so it's less than 17 hours away.
Spoken like a true Kiwi. Less than 17 hours. Clayton Kempton.
Flying to London is not long haul.
Not at all. We scoff at your 8 hours. Clayton Kempton, New Zealand Commissioner General to Expo 2020 Dubai. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.